This is Lele Pons from Suite 305 with Lele Pons. Game day at my house, it's chaos, but like in a fun way. The TV's ready, the remotes are ready, the kids' toys are going off, and somehow everybody needs batteries at the exact same time. That's why I keep Duracell stocked. And Duracell just released limited edition Duracell and Messi battery packs. The design is inspired by Messi's iconic left leg tattoo. So every battery feels like it comes with an extra kick. From the TV remote to automatic corkscrew, Duracell keeps us game day ready. Duracell double and triple A batteries are the only ones built different with power boost ingredients for long-lasting performance you can trust. Find the limited edition Duracell and Messi batteries in stores at Lowe's and Walmart or on Amazon.
Warning: this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
At Vuse, we're vapor done right. Always simple, always in your pocket. So you can focus on what really matters, like getting back to your podcast. Find out more at Vuse.com. That's Vuse.com.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Hi, how are you? Good morning, America. Yeah, it's good to be back, everybody. Thank you to Todd and Robin and everybody who made it to the show over the last several days. It was a great honeymoon. I'm glad to be back here in the studio and to talk about the world that continues to fall down around us. Oh, my God. Where do we even begin on this case? We're going to be focusing on the Siders today, the 16 kids horror story. This is like The Hills Have Eyes come to life, but it makes The Hills Have Eyes kind of feel like the Ritz-Carlton Diamond Collection, because it's just, it's so beyond comprehension. Or is it? Or no is doubt. It? 16 children found in an Ohio home, Hamden, Ohio. Some who can't speak, some who can't read, an 18-year-old who can't write her own name, the AG calling it pure evil. The only reason anyone found them was a misdemeanor because the guy couldn't stop showing his junk to the neighbors. okay. We got a lot to get through today on this. Let's start with the Dollar General employee. I want to talk about competency. I want to talk initially about the people who saw this and said nothing. It's not to blame, but I think more systemically a problem in our society with situations like this. Because in my opinion, and I'm curious to know what you think, Robin, this is not an isolated incident. It's certainly not with these folks to have attention being drawn to them. But I'm saying in general, there are people like this everywhere. We just like to look the other way. We like to drive through those neighborhoods and go, oh, what's going on with that house? And there's no oversight. We don't fund the departments and the municipalities and the authorities and things that overlook the well-being of children and families to a level where they can investigate these sort of things and take care of these sort of things. And then we're all shocked when one of these finally reaches headline level. I bet someone challenged me with money today. I could go find a neighborhood and probably find about 10 of these, you know, in the course of an hour. If you know exactly where to look and you know this, I mean, this is not a rare thing. And I think that's important to remember. But let's start with the Dollar General employee, describing them to reporters in detail, hygiene, the clothes, the closing time runs for years, people noticing these folks, nobody reporting anything. But I guess, you know, you report it and then what? I mean, what, and nothing happens when people do. What do you make of this? Just all these people who have seen these people, maybe said something, maybe didn't say anything, and this sort of behavior just running rampant.
There's so many aspects of this that just ring true, like you're saying, of the problems we have with our culture, our society, and just us as a species of what we do when we normalize or accept the normalized behavior that others present to us. And when that happens, what do you say? What do you do? Because I seriously doubt if people really wrestled too hard with what they saw because they didn't say anything. So there's numerous things that go into that. You have groupthink. And what happens a lot of times, groupthink, as a matter of fact, I mean, if you can actually Google this on YouTube, Google's on YouTube, you can actually look it up and search it on YouTube, where you can actually see these social experiments where you see someone kneed and fell down, like on a college campus, and they did it as an experiment, and they gave students, you know, a deadline to make it to class by. And you see people blowing by someone in obvious need on you know, lying down, looking like they're in trauma, but because they themselves had something to get to, they'll blow by them. Because, again, we're always going to look out for our own best interests. That's part of it. Then you also have the experiments that they did on the old candid camera in Alan Funt, where you have, you know, three or four people on an elevator all facing one way, and they get the other person that is actually facing the right way to turn around. Because we don't want to look out of place. We want to fit in. We want to conform. And so that is part of what goes on here. Then you have the normalcy of a culture and situation, economic status that gets normalized. And in this case, if you have that many kids, basically, what was it, one a year or one every other, or yeah, every year and a half, yeah, for like 18 years,
yeah,
you know, they've desensitized the fact that their family does this. And granted, now, I don't know these people, but when we have liking that happens, again, we have our own confirmation biases. And so say this person or a couple comes in, and I'll just use conjectures. I don't know what it was like for this Dollar General employee. But say you walk in a front door, and even if you walk in, you smell, you're disheveled, your kids are in bare feet, it's an atrocious scene, but you present yourself nice, friendly, accommodating, little head tilt and smile, you're generous, gregarious, they're going to excuse so many behaviors because that first impression was a positive first impression. And so that'll play into it if that's the case here or in any other case. And so liking goes a long way in these things. And then when we look at, you know, systemic problems with institutions and organizations for childcare, for protective care, for services, these are reactive organizations. They're not proactive organizations. In other words, how many of these people are paid to go out and find problems, or are they paid to react to problems reported to them? So if no one reports a problem, there's not going to be any action. Then, again, how the sausage is made here, as the great Bob Mata says, how many of these people are paid a wage that they're going to attract people that actually want to give a shit? And granted, I know these people give a shit, but at the same time, if you're not being paid a good wage, because I definitely know that people that are working in these most critical areas of childcare, of foster homes, all these things, they're the most underpaid state employees in the entire country. And so when you couple all these things together and then you have a family like this, I don't think they're evading law enforcement or evading accountability was intentional. It's just a byproduct of their transient lifestyle because they couldn't make a wage anywhere because they got married when they were stupid young. Well, she was 15 where the parents signed off. And so now you have generational stupid kicking in. They talk about generational trauma. So what I'm saying is, we got a large, this is a tsunami / hurricane of a perfect storm of everything going sideways.
They're mutants. I don't know where to put it.
They are mutants.
They're mutants. These are not human mutants. Beings. Yeah, these societal are societal mutants. And I think we need to start recognizing that. That's what's going on. These are mutants. And mutants should not be raising children. And go to any Dollar General in rural America and you will find these folks lurking in and out of the store at all hours of the day mm-hmm. with children. I've lived in some of these areas before.
I go to them all the time.
Oh yep. my God. I mean, it's so broken because even if you give a shit, even if you see something, and let's just start there at the give a shit level, because there's so many people who just don't because they got their own stuff going on, or they're at this super low level of thinking and ability and cognitive ability, which I believe, honestly, when you look at this yeah. you know, incestual hellhole that these people are from, it's yeah, I mean, these are folks who probably do not have the cognitive ability to care for themselves, more or less other people. But yet as a society, we go and say, oh, live and let live. We need to stop doing that if we truly give a shit about other human beings. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just wearing the bumper sticker or the pin or the ribbon or whatever that says we pretend to care. But then you go into the store and it's Mutants R Us walking around and you're like, Jesus Christ, you know, these poor kids. I mean, I do it all. Go to these stores like those kids are fucked. Like those are the first things I think half the time. And it's just like, and it's horrible. And there's nothing I can do about it. You can report it. And then give a shit. That starts there. You see something. Oh, God, these kids are effed. You say something. Who do you say something to? You say something to them. You're going to get a grunt and a drool. And then they're going to, you know, buy a beef stick and a Red Bull. And then you to do something to the people that actually could do something. That's the problem. There is nobody to do something. There's a department that supposedly is there. It's underfunded. It's undereducated. It's understaffed. There's...
But we don't overwhelmed
and we don't seem that's the bigger problem as a society. We don't seem to give a shit enough to fund the departments and the places. And if we're going to actually have societal safeguards in place in actual action, we don't do that. We just pretend they exist and we tell ourselves that they're there. And then we go, la, 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 la. I'm not going to pay attention to this. I'm just going to buy my shit over here. And you go check out and take your mutant family back home and abuse the shit out of them. And I'm going to pretend that I never see you. That seems to be how most of this works. What needs to change that these departments that exist for human services of protecting children, other than funding? I don't know what's going on here, because this just seems to be systematic to a point where I'm starting to be very suspicious of the actual departments that are supposed to be, you know, monitoring families and children as being more so a clearinghouse for child trafficking. And that may be why they're not being funded so well, because nobody wants to take a closer look as to how these children ever got on the map to begin with, or the millions that go missing every year. We don't know what happened to them, and there's no oversight for it. And there's 1,000 questions in there. But my God, this is systemic. This is not rare. This happens everywhere. Everybody who's hearing this knows exactly what I'm talking about, whether you're in the Dollar General, the Walmart, or whatever store at any place in the country. We see this shit all the time, and there's nothing anyone can do because, well, you know, we don't judge. Maybe we should.
And part of it, you know, again, I'm a studier and lover of history, because history is always prologue to what we see today. Non-political whatsoever, but people keep then deferring to, well, we'll just give it to the government. The government will take care of it. And so people get in that deferring to someone else to take care of this problem because it's messy. It's smelly. I don't want to deal with it. You know, years and years ago at the founding of our country, and even before that, granted, there are many, many things that could be fixed at all times in history, including our time in history, obviously in this area. But communities, because when you didn't have a federal government or state government that was so bloated with money and taxpayer money, it was up to the communities, churches, and families to actually take care of people because no one else was. And so deprivation and struggles drive innovation, a lot of things, and a lot of problem solving. And so if you look at the problems of these things back historically, they haven't gotten better. With more government, they just getting shifted to placing a blame onto someone else. And so this comes down to, I think what we're saying here is really more personal accountability of everyone to say something, step in. When you see a wobble in life, and when you see something deviating from that pattern of what's typically accepted, and is, again, and this is what people have a hard time getting through, is by taking action, you're not judging. By taking action means you're getting curious because something looks a little different. I do this all the time in every aspect of my life. When something gives me a little bit of a wobble, it grabs my attention, and I get curious. Like, tell me more about this. Tell me more about this. I see it all the time, whether I'm going to my local YMCA. It happens in our cases when we have people going into Walmarts buying body bags.
The body bag section at Walmart.
I still can't get over that one. Or
that's
David.
On Amazon. That's Amazon where you get the body. Although I'm guessing maybe on the website. I don't know.
No,
I know.
No. What did that one guy do? He was walking out of Walmart. You know, he's loading up his trunk with what is all the stuff he bought? God, I can't remember that case. But yeah, David did the same thing though on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
It's just stuff that kind of sticks out of the norm that grabs your attention. You just have to lean in. And again, the squeaky, I said this so much while you're gone too, Tony, it's that squeaky wheel that gets the oil. When a system's overloaded and you have people like me who's a federal employee trying to triage every single day because you are compelled, and this is where my heart and soul are going to go out to the people that actually are doing these jobs, underpaid, underfunded, and overwhelmed, but they're still showing up every day to do it. They don't, a lot of times they need help to know what to triage first, because when you have 1,000 things in front of you, each one of them are worthy. How do you triage something to the top? Well, how do you triage that? If you're not going to give it more funding, if you're not going to give it the resources it needs, you need someone to create a filter for you. Say, listen, I know you have 1,000 things, but really right now you have 18 children right here, right now. Go. That's what it takes. And that comes down to that personal accountability we should all have more of.
We need to prioritize what we actually give a shit about in this country. Because, I mean, and we actually, that we truly do. I'm not just pretending to. Because we don't give a shit about children unless they're, you know, this specific, you know, look demographic or whatnot, or don't smell. I mean, it's insane. You know, it's a lie. We tell ourselves, oh, there's a system in place for that the government takes care of that there is call CPS on you, and they're like, oh, great, so they'll do nothing. I mean, it's just, I mean, if the systems worked, that would be a different story. But we put no priority on these systems, or fund them, or staff them. We need an army of people at this point to handle the mutant problem that we have in this country, and to rescue these children. Otherwise, they're just going to perpetuate it. They'll become mutant 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, and by the time they're 14, they'll have 14 more of them. It's just, it's out of control.
So, this is, again, it's kind of granular on how the sausage is made on this one. One of the problems I saw inside the FBI and in all government institutions was, and this is the hard one to get through, to figure out how to solve this. So, say you have a pot of money that you're collected through your taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have people, executives, and people, heads of departments, that are told you're allocated this amount of money. And we're going to, let's assume the glass is half full, and these people are very altruistic. They're not there for careers, not there for advancement. They're there because they care passionately about the mission. In order for them to be able to get more money, to be able to save more people, they have to show the stats of what they're able to do, the cases they're able to solve and bring to conclusion. So I saw in my own career, the challenge I faced every day was, how do I articulate to my bosses who just, in order to get funding for my cases, in order to get funding for what I was doing, in order to get support from executive management, I had to be able to show, here's the problem, here's the action, here's the result, in a very short timeline, because you're then rated and graded off the stats you created for your bosses. Because in order to get funding from a bean counter, you got to show the beans that you counted. And when you start getting 1 or 2 degrees of separation removed from the granular issues of 18 kids living in squalor, beyond squalor, that's one, think about it, that is one problem solved, even though it's 18 children. Meanwhile, if I can actually focus on this, and over here, where there's only 1 or 2 children potentially, that's 3 beans.
Yeah.
And this counts. Well, so again, that's the granular part of it. Yeah, it
all
is.
Of, all it's of it totally doesn't
broken.
Work.
The accountability of it.
Yeah. None of it makes any sense. I mean, if you look at our education system too, I know it's a lot of it state by state, but there are federal, lanes of this too. So much of it, funding for schools, at least I know in my state, is very much based on the performance of the school. And typically, statistically, in lower income areas, in less educated areas, you're not going to have as high a performing schools. You're getting children that are coming from families that they're not able to raise their kids to a higher level initially. But this is where you would go, okay, this is where the education system can come in. Maybe we should be funding those areas, those specific schools, a bit more to help raise those kids up beyond where they came from. But no, our system says we're going to fund them less. We're going to give them less because they're doing shitty. We're going to punish you with less. What the fuck? If there's any place where there's a deficiency, this is where you would spend some attention. If you're in the private sector, if you're like, well, we could work on something over here, you might need a little more funding. Not blind funding, but funding in very targeted areas to help raise things up. And we do the opposite. We're like, oh, you're doing shitty? We're going to take some more from you, and then some more from you, and then some more from you. And then you have these schools that are with poor children that are being undereducated, and the system's underfunded, then you get the worst teachers oftentimes. And I'm not trying to knock everyone. There's some lovely, wonderful teachers in those schools. My wife happens to be one of them. And there
first time
are
you said wife on here.
Yeah, it is. But but I see it. I mean, there are wonderful ones, but you also have a very high burnout rate in places like that because of the underfunding and everything. Yep. So they don't last very long. So you get entry level. You get the folks who are not going to have the mental capacity or reps to be equipped to help those children in the ways that they should. So it just becomes this vicious cycle of under-education, underfunding, and then rinse and repeat.
Yeah, it's, and my wife's the same thing. She's a teacher in elementary school, and the system's so overwhelmed here that, and I live in a very good area in Virginia, and they bring in trailers because of not enough money, not for all the students they're bringing in. The classroom sizes, unbelievable. Again, I know we're going astray of this, but again, it's the problem of
it's
where
the system.
Of where we're putting our, and I wish we had the answer for it. I
know
don't.
We're not going to solve it here, obviously, but it's just this is so much more of a conversation than just shock, horror, hoarder house. This is such a systematic, common problem. And when I heard this story, I'm like, this shit's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's
like, let's not pretend this is some sort of weird one-off. It's not. One more on this, and I'm just curious to get your thoughts on the observations of the community. And I'll give you my thoughts on this too. You were talking about the noise of this, where there's this buzz here, there's wobble here, and there's just so many wobbles. Eventually, if everybody's wobbling, that becomes the norm. The goalposts keep moving. Neighbor three doors down, 6 years, says he never saw a single child, 20 people, 1,300 square foot house. Do you buy it? Do you buy that he didn't see anything? I'm not saying they're lying, but I'm wondering if this is just such a normalcy of the society in the area that this is just another Tuesday.
I think it is. I think it is a normalcy. I've read numerous, again, I live in a decent area, luckily in Virginia, but I read and consume an awful big amount of stuff, and you read things, the Pulitzer Prize winner on Demon Copperhead. And that is a book about rural Virginia down, I think it was around Bristol area, right on Tennessee border. Very similar to, again, put your politics aside. If you read J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy, also talks about Appalachia, talks about, living and growing up in that kind of culture. That is such a normalcy of behavior that it's because it's actually a lot of them helping each other through these rough times, and then just it's not giving a pass. It's just again, like you said,
but
it's just normalcy.
We do give it a pass. Isn't that quaint? Isn't that cute? There's plenty of other groups throughout our country where it's like live and let live to a certain extent, but then they reproduce. And I mean, if we actually give a shit about these kids, we got to kind of stop with some of this shit. And we got to cop. No, this isn't a help. We've we're an elevated society, unless we don't want to be. We don't need to accept horrific, you know, behavior, generational trauma to just keep repeating itself over and over and then be surprised by the results. Like, oh, weren't they quaint? Like, oh, do you see all the horrible abuse that they're doing to their friends and their family and their young girls while you buy their bread at the roadside stand? You know what I'm talking about there. I mean, that sort of shit exists everywhere. And we just like to look the other way and pretend that if I don't know about it, then it's not happening.
Well, here's a glass half full, as Robin always does, is that, you know, it's because of us. You know, there's lots of shows covering this. And this didn't exist before because, you know, way back before CNN even came about in the 80s, I remember when it was invented and you had the 24-hour news cycle and people had to sell marketing, you know, on those things. And so you only had four channels on TV covering news for 30 minutes a night. And so these things get overlooked. But now these things aren't getting overlooked by everyone. We're covering it. Other people are covering it. And so what happens is when people start going for elections in areas that we cover these things, hopefully again, it's like the Titanic. Big ship, small rudder, heading for an iceberg. You turn that rudder hard over, you're still going to hit that iceberg, but maybe not straight on. You're going to glance it. So hopefully by us covering and others people's covering it, you know, it's going to start slowly shifting that awareness that society has. Because again, being the glass half full, there are many, we only cover really dark, broken people, I know, generally, but there are so many more good people than dark people out there. And so the more they're aware of it, I think the more it'll keep shifting.
And that's where the good needs to be empowered enough to do something about the bad. There's too many protections on the bad, it feels like, that enables the horrible behavior and then also does not stop the cycle of the behavior and the allowing of continual reproduction into these communities, because you just create more mutants and these kids are screwed. They are so, it's nothing, they have no choice in the matter, and that's what's so heartbreaking.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The attorney general said the children looked almost feral. Some can't speak, some can't read. An 18-year-old can't write her own name. These 16 children spent their entire lives inside homes that functioned as a sealed world. No school, no doctors, no outside contact. Siobhan Scott is with us to help us break all of this down. I want to go to an interesting thing that was said by her attorney, Elizabeth's attorney. She said that the first thing that she asked about, and I think this has struck people as being a little bit odd, wasn't about getting out. It was about her children. Now, some people hear that and they're like, oh, she's a devoted mom in some weird sense of the term, or something else. There's a weird sense of distortion here. Can she be someone who believed she was taking the best care of the children that she could and it still be this insanely harsh hellhole of a reality, but in her mind she was just being mom on a Tuesday in the world that she knew.
And these poor kids were probably the extent of her, if you want to use the word love, you know, this was probably all she had, was her attachment with these kids. And in all likelihood, she has a very strong attachment to them.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean you know how to raise them properly. You don't know what you're doing. But clearly she had an emotional bond. And I don't think this living situation was about any ill intent on her part, is my guess. She was not trying to hurt the children. Now, there may have been other people in the home who were hurting the children. But my guess is that, you know, these kids meant the world to her. They were her world to her. That's all she had, was these children.
But you see those pictures of that house, and if the interior pictures are legit, and that's still, I think, up in the air as of this recording. But from what we can tell, how, I mean, in any sense of the world, I mean, how does anybody's mind look at this and go, yeah, I'm doing my best for my kids.
Right.
Right. That's the hard thing to wrap one's mind around.
Hoarding is such, and you know, of course, we have hoarding and beyond here. Yeah. Hoarding on steroids with the filth and everything. But hoarding is surprisingly common, and I do meet up with that quite often in my work. The interesting thing about people with hoarding disorder is they never come to therapy and say, "I want help because I'm a hoarder." They hide that, and they hide it from the world. They hide it from the therapist. But when I often find out about it is when I'll interview a family member, and it may be someone in the home. It might be a sibling of an adult. And often when that person says, "Well, you know about the condition of the home, don't you?" And I'm like, "No, of course not. I don't go out to people's homes. I don't know what they live in." But I've met very professional people that appear well-dressed, well-groomed, well-put together, and yet they are hoarders. And when I heard this from family members, all of a sudden, the kids' problems make sense. You know, then I understand more about what's going on. But it's very hard to treat, because hoarders, even though they know, perhaps know enough to be embarrassed about it, it really is a brain abnormality, and it's such a strong compulsion for them. It's not something that they typically seek help with. So you'll find a lot of people who appear, I'm thinking of professional people who appear to be teachers and, you know, lawyers and people that you'd look at and go, "Well, they've obviously got a normal life, or they've got it together," but they live in homes like that.
These people had neither going on. I mean, that's the thing. Right. I mean, there's no profession. I mean, there's obviously a level of shame that I'm sure exists, which then makes people, you know, kind of circle the wagons. And you got four adults here that basically, is that part of what goes on? You get four people who are all living in this circle of shame, and it's so deep and so dark that, I mean, it's just so normalized at a certain point that it's not even felt as shame. This is just the lifestyle of what it is. And they can't see beyond it. I'm sure there's a fear element of being exposed, of having your children taken away. There's probably so many things at play here, but they are never pulling a single lever to remove those threats that they fear. But that is addiction as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the deficit. It's an alcoholic. I'm addicted to this, whatever. Same sort of dynamics are at play within the brain.
And I'm going to guess that there is one dominant person in the home. I don't know who the dominant person is, but it's the dominant person, could have been grandmother Christina, that sort of set the tone for the hoarding, for the stuff. Mm-hmm. And that person had so much control over everybody else in the family that nobody opposed it, that they just sort of gave up and went along with it.
And I want to follow up on, again, because Tony used the word shame. And I'm curious, Siobhan, because what popped in my mind is that, can shame exist if there's no comparison to have shame, to be shameful about? In other words, if you've been so isolated in a house like this with hoarding, but you have nothing to compare it to, would there be shame about the hoarding, or would there be shame about the lifestyle? Is it possible? I mean, I just don't know. Is that even possible?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would depend probably on how much exposure to the outside world people had. And I think even if you're exposed to TV, right, which I don't know that these people were at all, but, you know, you have the sense of what normal is.
Right.
And if you're raised with a sense that, you know, we're really different from normal, then there's probably some shame about it. But like for the children who clearly had no idea what normal is, they don't even speak. I mean, they probably don't know enough to be ashamed of the situation.
And the other thing I wanted to circle back on too was I found it inspiring is a right word. I found it a little bit of a relief actually to hear Elizabeth's name, that she cared. The first thing she said was to care about her kids. What popped in my mind was a case. I had to look it up because I couldn't remember the name of J.C. Duggard. She was abducted in 91 and wound up giving birth. The father was the abductor, and she wound up escaping with her kids. And this happened in, I think it was California. Philip Garrido did it years ago. She formed that bond with her kids. in that really isolated abduction thing and maintain a lot of empathy, even in spite of all the abuse that she was going through. Do you see that as playing out here, you know, that she was able to maintain this empathy that she has for her children, even if they might not even be hers or that they were forced upon her?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a common situation in a case like that, where the woman bonds with the kids and has a very deep attachment to them, despite the horrendous circumstances.
Yeah.
These kids, obviously 16 of them, you're not going to find a foster kid or foster parent that's going to, let's bring all the kids together. Oh, wait, maybe Jim, Bob, and Michelle would like to take a second round. Even that would be a better environment by a little. The fact that you have these 16 kids, they're in the system now. The amount of psychological help that every single one of them will need is going to be far beyond the abilities of 99.9% of any foster family available.
Yeah.
Or the group home or orphanage type situation where they stay at. How and what goes on next for these 16 kids? They're still kids. And the only world they knew was this. I mean, what do you do with children coming out of an environment like this? Obviously, keeping them together, probably not going to be an option.
Yeah.
But the system sees kids coming out of situations like this every single day, whether there's 16 siblings or not. How do you help them?
That is the big question, right? Because even when we compare this with the Turpin case with the 13 kids in California, and that was in a part of the country where there were more resources economically and more choices for foster homes and more funding for help for the kids. But they did not get good placements. You know, some of them did. Some of them were taken advantage of in their foster homes and were not treated well. So this is the million-dollar question, is where can you find a living situation where the kids are basically going to be reparented from the start? You know, they need every kind of structure that they can possibly get, not only from you know, how to bathe yourself, how to speak, how to communicate, how to eat normally, what you eat. I mean, it's just like starting with an infant who may be 14 or 15 years old, you know, and trying to repair it.
And to that, Siobhan, I can only imagine, so you do that reversal, that deep empathy for the kids coming out of this. The only feeling of safety, as twisted as that safety was this household environment, was each other, because it's all they have. There's no yin and yang in comparison, contrast, and no anything different than this. And so can you imagine you're now removed from the only people you've ever known in your life, the only people that you have felt safe with, and now you're thrust into and even separated from all these people? What's the first step you would take as a therapist to be, before you even taught them how to speak in some cases, or write or do anything, because that is so far, that's like running and they don't even know how to crawl yet.
Yeah.
What's the first steps you take at these different age levels to allow them to feel safe again, that they can actually start making some slow movement and progress towards healthy?
That is a big question, right? And I think it's going to, number one, be the connection, the human connection, because I think nurturing, loving, compassionate, attuned human relationships are how people heal. And that's what these kids are going to need. Yeah. I mean, there are a million skills they need, right? But before you even get into skill building, how do you meet them where they're at? How do you try to maybe engage them in a bit of play, expose them to, you know, small animals can sometimes be something that they can connect with, you know, are there pets? But just how to reach them on that very heart-to-heart level, I always talk about. And you have to start with that sense of safety. And, you know, I'm imagining these kids are hungry. I imagine they haven't been well fed. So just meeting their physical needs would be important. And then looking at long range, yeah, there's going to be years of psychological work ahead of them to help them develop.
Do you think allowing them to maintain contact with their parents is good or bad, or how do you think that's going to play out?
That's a really tough one. And I think we'd have to know more about the parents and do the parents have the capacity to be connected and attuned and provide some kind of soothing for them. My guess, just from what we know, is that Elizabeth would be the one that they would probably want contact with. And so, yes, working with, this is a big group, but you'd want to be looking at the whole systemic aspects of working with the adults and with the children, and which of the adults were the safest person for the kids to be connected with, and how much contact do you structure, and how would you structure that? I think those are all really important pieces to be looking at. Yeah.
I mean, just on the surface here, it certainly looks like none of them are safe for the children. But I mean, and obviously we have systems that are all about family reunification and that sort of bullshit. When you have something like this, it is really, and I know, you know, some people will not be happy with this, but is really the best thing for these children? And that's what we have to look at this point, is these children. The adults, honestly, you know, yes, victims to a certain extent, but have fun. You get to, you know, reap the rewards of your consequential choices. But these kids, that's where the focus needs to be. Is the best thing for them to be in no contact with their genetic family ever again, and maybe not the brothers and sisters either, because every piece of that is going to be broken human beings, and every single one of those people need to be in an environment where they can grow, where they can learn, where they can develop basic human skills, and having reminders and things that pull them back into the absolutely horrendous toxic world which they came out of. Is it best just clean break for the best odds of any of these children being a functional human being in society at any point in their future existence? Is it just fresh start across the board? Yes, because there literally is no goodness. Even if there is some comfort there, yeah, there's comfort in eating absolute shit food. It doesn't mean it's good for you. You know, and there's absolute shit love too, and it doesn't mean it's good for you. It may make you feel good in that moment, and then, you know, you're regretting that shortly thereafter. Is that kind of what needs to be looked at in a situation like this?
I would say it's a case by case situation, probably with each child. And I think that if they had one of these adults, and I'm going to go with mother, if they had a bond that was meaningful to them, that to just completely 100% sever that and sever it permanently would probably not be the ideal thing for them. But certainly, should she have lots of time alone with them? No. Should she have custody of them ever again? No. But would there be a safe way for them to have some kind of contact with her in a way that was soothing to them and comforting to them? Because they may be very worried about her at this point, or at least the older kids are worried about her, what happened to her. Mm-hmm. And so I think you just sort of have to go case by case, child by child. And yet there may be some, particularly, again, older kids that want nothing to do with any of them. And in that case, I would honor that as well.
And one more thing I wanted to add, because I saw one of the listeners had asked about is there funding for this in the system for their counseling and stuff. So, yeah, how it works in Ohio. Child Protective Services, County Job and Family Services, it is funded by the county, the state. Medicaid does pick up children foster care of state of custody, qualified for Medicaid, which covers therapy, individual, group, and family, psychiatric care, medications, assessments, trauma-focused programs as well. As well, there is other additional fundings are available through the state of Ohio, depending on the high profile that this case gets. So hypothetically, yes, they're I said hypothetically,
would put a big hypothetical on that because it sounds lovely on paper. That's one of those things where it's like people go, oh, great. It'll all be taken care of then, right?
And then there's, like we saw yesterday, it's a great program, but no follow-up, you know? And
no follow-up, no funding, no staffing. And, oh, yeah, we'll get to that. You'll get your counseling, your once a year.
And I'm
counselor.
Always worried about the ones that come in here because they know how to work the system. Oh, I'll take them in foster care. I'll get them counseling. Where's my check? I always worry about those ones. Now, granted, there's a lot of really, really good humanitarians out there doing a lot of good work in foster care system. I mean, I got some in my neighborhood here, but at the same time, though, there's people that'll abuse anything.
Well, I mean, the systems are so broken across the country of where the focus and is and where the funding goes and who's checking on what and when the system gives a shit and when it doesn't give a shit. And it's so backward. I mean, I've seen it firsthand and it's insane. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation here.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.